I hope all of you who were able to go to the feast had a wonderful time, and those who were not able to go, hopefully you were able to catch some of the messages and will be able to go in 2025. This year, Elsa and I went to Gatlinburg with a number of others from our congregations, and it was a great experience. Meanwhile, as I've heard from others going to PCB and Morehead City, all the reports I've heard have been very good and positive, so that's great to hear. But I know there were some feast time and post-feast trials too, as we heard in the prayer requests, and we'll continue to pray for them. Brethren, the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day are amazing. They provide such great opportunities to learn about God's way and our future role in God's kingdom, and give us opportunities to meet new people and to reestablish old friendships too. In preparing for this message, though, I realized that this is the first time I've ever spoken immediately after the feast. And because of that, I couldn't help but wonder, what more can I say than has already been said? So for today, I decided to use a different approach. Since during the feast, the speakers focus in on the great issues of life and the great vision of the future that God gives us, today I'd like us to consider some of the little issues and opportunities of life. Little issues and little lessons that in their entirety can add up to something big. Many times after the feast, Elsa and I would set aside a little time to review the feast, what went well and what didn't go quite so well, and we'd like to improve in the future. So this year, I thought about lessons of the feast all during the feast, knowing I would be talking to you today. So today, let's consider some of the little issues or lessons from the feast that can help us for future feasts and with life in general. By the way, I'm not saying that I've learned all the lessons God has given me. Only God himself knows for sure when we truly have mastered the material, the lessons he's given us. But I am striving to learn, and hopefully this will be helpful to all of you. So lesson number one, plan for the feast, but be ready to flex as God shows us through his Spirit. Now we're all to go to the place where God chooses to place his name. In our age, we're blessed with a multitude of feast sites to choose from. After praying about it, we have to pick one to go to that we feel God would want us to go to. This year, Elsa and I, after praying, we chose to go to Gatlinburg for a number of reasons. One, it was closer. We loved the beauty of the mountains. And we were able to help some others attend the feast by going there. But I have to laugh at this now, and I mentioned this to Mr. Preston before the feast. Part of my thinking back then in my mind was, well, if I go to Gatlinburg, at least I don't have to worry about hurricanes. But that was before Hurricane Helene struck. We're still able to go to Gatlinburg, but we had to go a little bit different route. Instead of taking I-40, we took 74 West, rather, and then at Cherokee, we took 441 up to Gatlinburg through the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. In other words, we had to flex a little. Maybe you had to do some flexing this year, too. As Christians, sometimes we have to change our plans as we follow Jesus Christ, wherever he leads us through his Spirit. Concerning the 144,000, we're told in Revelation chapter 14 and verse 4, these are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Sometimes following the Lamb, Jesus Christ, means we have to make some course corrections, either physically or spiritually, or both. Lesson number two, Keep minor problems in perspective and look for practical solutions with God's help. You know, sometimes we face minor difficulties, don't we, at the feast or in life, that can test our attitude and patience, such as forgetting to take some clothing item along with us, or getting delayed because of traffic, or breaking something we didn't mean to break, or running out of groceries at an inopportune time. This could include any many trials or problems that could, if we let them, get us into a bad attitude. In Gatlinburg, we enjoyed some nice accommodations. Our motel was conveniently located near the stores and restaurants. We could just walk to some of the attractions. The rooms were remodeled with wood paneling. The back balcony of our motel room overlooked a nice running stream. It was very great for white noise at night for sleeping. And the feast, the convention center we met at, Rocky Top Sport Facility actually, was just a short drive away, so it was very convenient. We had beautiful weather, just like in PCB. We had beautiful weather in Gatlinburg too, not any rain the whole time. Started out a bit cool, and poor Wade and Bill, who were camping, were a bit cold, but every day got a little bit warmer, so that was very nice. And of course, we had wonderful, wonderful messages and great fellowship. But just like at every feast, there are some challenges too. And each person's challenges are unique. You know, even in a motel, I know it's different than challenges of camping, but even in a motel, little problems can creep up. And some of them, in retrospect, are pretty funny. Like, one day I was just sitting on the edge of the bathtub. We had a towel on the floor. My feet were on the towel. I lifted up one foot. I fell over backwards into the tub, hit my head really hard on the grab bar, and it was very painful. Put a little bit of ice, and I didn't have much swelling, so in retrospect, it was minor. It was kind of funny. Good thing else I didn't take a picture of it. So I was dressed. Don't worry about that. Another day, I was praying, just finished praying, and all of a sudden, I smelled smoke. I thought, did Elsa burn something in the kitchen? Sorry, Elsa, just teasing. No, we were in a motel. There was no kitchen. So then I went over to the air conditioning unit and sniffed. It smelled like smoke was coming out of the AC unit. But Elsa started sniffing too and said, no, it's coming from outside in the front. So after investigation, we found out there was this big white truck that had been running its motor. It kept running and running for at least a half an hour and was spewing out all this exhaust, and it was seeping into our room through a crack in the door. So we did our best to stuff a washcloth in the crack and keep the exhaust coming in. Luckily, fortunately for us, eventually they finished packing and drove away, but it was almost asphyxiating for a bit. Maybe it opened the back door, opened windows in the back. Luckily, there's fresh air back there. And by the way, I wasn't the only one that whacked my head during the feast also. In Gatlinburg, they have all these art forms, I could call it. People with chainsaws carve out of trees and logs various shapes and objects and pictures. And there was this giant lion with it looked like a throne seat with a lion head at the top. And Elsa decided she was going to sit on the lion throne seat. She sat down, and when she sat down, the chin of the lion whacked her in the back of the head. Poor Elsa. So, and then there were also lights and noise from the roller coaster that we didn't know about that was built right next to our motel. But they ended at 11, and after 11, we got plenty of sleep. But you know, those things are all minor, insignificant injuries, inconveniences, or problems that we must refuse to let dampen the joy of the feast. Maybe you experienced some minor inconveniences at the feast where you were this year. When we face minor problems, it's good for us to keep perspective on things. Minor problems or inconveniences aren't worth worrying about. We need to remember those going through far worse trials and need our attention and prayers. Such suffering experienced by the Griders and the Geislers and the McPhersons and others. In addition, our brethren, in addition to the trials that our brethren are going through, I found out during the feast my brother-in-law was just coming down with, he's not in the church, but he was coming down a flight of stairs. He tripped and fell. He broke bones in his face, broke his wrist. He had to go into the hospital. So there's just all kinds of problems that people face. So it's good for us, though, to keep minor problems in perspective and look for practical solutions with God's help. Lesson number 3, strive to be at your best and remember God is watching you. In order to have the best experience of the feast and of services here in our local area, we need to strive as much as possible to stay well physically and spiritually. You know, learning is hampered if we're physically, spiritually, emotionally, socially, mentally run down. We shouldn't feel bad if we get sick of the feast. I certainly have many times. Sickness happens, but we should try to learn lessons about staying well and avoiding future sickness. Last year, Elsa and I got COVID at the feast. It was a bit challenging just making it home afterwards. It's so easy to get sick at the feast because there's a new location, you're eating different foods, you may stay up late, get up early, different environment. If you've never gotten sick at the feast, congratulations. But if you live a little bit longer, you probably will experience it. This year, we tried our best to stay well, and with God's mercy, we stayed well, and our wonderful traveling companions, Nancy Egbert and Linda Hamrick, stayed well, too, as far as I know. What are some simple things we can do to stay well? We can be temperate and moderate in all things, as the Bible instructs us. We can avoid eating too many sweets, avoid fatty foods and not non-nutritious food. We can also strive to have adequate sleep, exercise, and sunshine, and do our best to stay hydrated. To get the most out of services at the feast or locally, we need to do our best to stay well. How about you? Were you able to avoid illness at the feast this year? If so, great. If not, you might want to think about ways to improve your experience for next year. But it isn't just physical health that we should be concerned about. Even more importantly, we need to focus in on our spiritual health. Now, at the feast, a lot of the feast sites are wonderful locations, but often there's a lot of worldly attractions that could pull us away from God if we let them. It's nice to go to the feast and to go to some of the wholesome entertainment or attractions that are available. But where is our focus? We need to remember God is watching us. What does our heart desire? Just worldly things? Or do we desire to be at church and attend services as much as possible? God is watching us and to see if we are obedient to Him, to see if we need help, and to see how we may or may not fit into His kingdom. I heard a minister once say, I thought this was very interesting and helpful. He said, God knows what we're like when we're poor and struggling financially. But at the feast, God gets to see how we are when we're rich or when we have lots of funds. So how are we using our money at the feast? But of course, God is watching us all the time, not just at the feast, but year-round. So how are we behaving? We need to always remember God sees everything we're doing. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9. That's 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 9. That tells us, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him." God is looking for ways to bless us, to bless those who are loyal to him. So for all these reasons, it's important to strive to be at our best and remember that God is watching us. Lesson number four. There's seven lessons, just so you know how far I'll be going today. Lesson number four, say yes to opportunities to serve. Now, sometimes we might be asked to do things at the feast or locally that we've never done before. It might be a little scary. It takes some courage sometimes to do something new, or if you see a need, to ask for help. Proverbs 3:27 says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is good when it is in the power of your hand to do so." So if we have the opportunity to do good and we're capable of doing that good deed or action with God's help, we shouldn't hesitate to do it. Serving the needs of others can take some courage sometimes. It's not always easy doing something new or being in the spotlight. But if we see a need and we're asked to help out in an area that we're well equipped to handle, don't hesitate, but accept the challenge. Do your best with God's help to fulfill the responsibility you're given or take care of the problem that needs taking care of. That doesn't mean, however, we have to do something outside our abilities. For instance, one year I was asked if I could help out with the stage decorations, but I had to say decline gracefully because I had hip problems. I could hardly walk that year. That was before I had hip surgery. And they were very understanding about it. But sometimes we do have to say no. But if possible, we should say yes as often as we can. Another way to serve is to consider the needs of others. On the way to the feast, we saw a lot of destruction from the hurricane. From Forest City to Asheville, about every mile, there was a tree down. A lot of the trees had smashed the guardrails to pieces. A lot of the trees were sawed off at the end. So you know that before, the trees were into the highway, and there must have been a crew that came along and trimmed all the branches off. There were signposts without signs. There were signs that were on the ground, mangled up by the hurricane. At the feast this year, there was a disaster relief collection for the victims of the storm. Maybe that was true at your feast site as well. It was another opportunity to help others, even outside our fellowship. Philippians 2 and verse 4, that's Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4 tells us, "Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." And 1 Timothy, we could also serve others through our prayers. 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 4. That's 1 Timothy chapter 2, 1 through 4. "Therefore I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth." Now, it's important also that we don't overpack our schedule, but we allow some free time in case someone has a need. If we're too busy, we may not be able to assist others. We should expect the unexpected and plan accordingly, and be ready to assist others as we're able. Okay, let's move on to lesson number five. Be kind and friendly to strangers and fellowship with other believers. Hebrews 13:2 tells us, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels." At the feast and in our local church area, it's so important to be kind and friendly to strangers, those we don't know. Sometimes we can go up to them and greet them, and other times strangers will come up to us and to talk to us. Either way, we should be friendly and outgoing, yet not overbearing. Give people their space, respect their privacy, but show genuine interest. At the feast, we can, or here, ask people's names, ask where they live. We can, if they're in the area, ask, did the hurricane affect them? Just find common ground to talk to them. Share the joy if things are going well for them, and console them if things are going bad. One young lady at the feast, Elizabeth Ross, I'll mention her name. She set a really fine example. Wade Nanny and I were just standing there chatting, and she came to us and greeted us and found out, I mean, to me, I'd never met her before, but it turns out I knew her sister. Rebecca has come to her congregation here for visits, and she knew both Heidi and Heather. So just talking to people, you start to learn we are a small family. We do have connections with one another. So I'm so glad she came by and chatted with us, and we had a very good conversation about many different things. Speaking to our brothers and sisters in Christ, fellowshipping among ourselves and getting to know each other is very important. And it helps us to know how to serve each other better and what to pray about. One of Elsa's favorite scriptures, and one that points to the importance of Christian fellowship, is Malachi 3:16, and it is a good one. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 16 tells us, "Then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name." So we should fellowship with others and be kind and friendly to strangers. Lesson number 6, use the feast to propel you forward into spiritual growth. You know, sometimes we can get discouraged after the feast. There's even a name for it. Post-feast letdown. But I recently heard a sermon by Darris McNeely. He said it shouldn't be post-feast letdown. It should be post-feast enthusiasm. It was a really, really good message. You might want to listen to it sometime. But we can get a little discouraged coming back to the same old problems, the same old job, the same old school, the same old situation we're in. But it doesn't have to be that way. During the feast, the speakers mentioned things to help us stay motivated, to keep the vision of God's kingdom burning in our hearts and our minds. Mr. Shavey encouraged us to develop agape love. Others gave us other things to do. When you have time, review your feast notes and see if there's some things mentioned that can help us to stay motivated. We're facing a lot of dark days, if you will, with Halloween and Christmas and other pagan holidays coming up. So we need to stay motivated. Write down spiritual goals for yourself, such as reading the Bible through the Bible. That's what Stan Martin at Gatlinburg encouraged us to do. Write down any questions you may have. I mean, it can be just random things. Like I was reading and noticed in a verse the word always in it. That got me curious. What are some things that we should always be doing? The Bible, actually, there's a number of verses that say have the word always in them. Another example, the Bible often says, be strong and have good courage. What does it mean to have good courage? Is that contrasted to bad courage? Write down things about God's word or way of life you're curious about, you'd like to learn more about, and then study into it or ask for help in finding the answers. Yes, we can use what we learned at the feast to help propel us into future and further spiritual growth. And lesson number 7, my last one, see the hand of God and his greatness and be thankful. There are many other lessons from the feast that we could consider, but again, this is the last one. See the hand of God and his greatness and be thankful. One of the purposes of the feast, according to Deuteronomy 14:23, is to help us to learn to fear our Lord God always. Oh, there's another always in there. I just noticed. In addition to learning to fear and respect God through Bible-based messages we heard, we can learn also about God's greatness through our travels to and from the feast. Now, I would just insert here, traveling for the feast. Sometimes as a father or a parent, we can't totally be at rest until our children are safely back home. So Heidi went to Australia for the feast this year, and she just got back at 2 a.m. last night. I didn't stay up that late, but I did wake up in the middle of the night at 4 and checked my phone, found out she arrived home safe and sound. Heather and Chris, as far as I know, are still traveling. They safely made it out of Mexico to, I think it was Dallas they flew into. But because of delays, they couldn't get a connecting flight, so the airline put them up for the night. So they are still not quite home, but hopefully soon. But we can learn a lot through our travels. Seeing God's creation, seeing how big God is and how little we are, can help us to learn to love and respect and fear God that much more. And sometimes we can forget or take God's greatness for granted. But travel can help us change that. I mentioned earlier, we took a different route. We took the scenic route this year. So traveling from Cherokee up to Gatlinburg is a very windy road, twists along the edge of the mountains. And it snowed the night before. So there was snow on the side of the road, snow in the branches, and the mountains were glistening in the sun. It was beautiful. It also had to remind me a couple times, Martin, keep your eyes on the road. Because I wanted to see the beautiful mountain scenery. But we made it fine. And later that day, I'm sure you all saw too, the moon was super huge this year. Seems like it gets bigger every year. At least this year it was big. During the feast, us and I were able to go to the Ripley's Aquarium in Gatlinburg. We got to see the incredibly brilliant fish, and we saw penguins, we saw stingrays. So we saw a lot of God's creatures, which helped to reflect his greatness. Hopefully you too were able to stop and reflect on the greatness of God as you witnessed the beauty of his creation. Psalm 19 and verse 1 gives us an example of how the creation points to the greatness of God. Psalm 19:1 tells us, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. And in addition to observing nature, fellowshipping with others can strengthen our awe for God as well. We had Nancy with us in the trip, and loved to hear her stories again about the miracles in her life. And also at the feast, Hazel Lambert was there in Gatlinburg, and we got to talk to her. Hazel, Mrs. Lambert, was very lively, very energetic, and it's evident of God's hand and healing in her life. Pastor Johnny Lambert told about some of the ordeals they had went through. Luckily, Mrs. Lambert didn't remember any of it, she said. So that was a blessing, actually. He also mentioned how much he missed the Kesters, but Kirk and Phoebe, you need to stay with us. It was a joy arriving at God's feast site and during the feast, but it's also a joy when we get back home, when we drive into our driveway and see our house is still standing and God fulfilled his promise in Exodus 34:24. So that is just one more thing to rejoice about at the end of the feast. So rather than at the feast and always, we need to see God's hand at work in his creation and see his greatness and be thankful. So what are some lessons from the feast that we can apply throughout the year? We can plan and prepare for the feast, but be ready to flex as God directs us through his Spirit. We can keep minor problems in perspective and look for practical solutions with God's help. We can strive to be our best and remember that God is watching us. We can say yes to opportunities to serve. We can be kind and friendly to strangers and fellowship with one another. We can leverage what we learned at the feast to help us to continue to grow spiritually. And we can see the hand of God and his greatness and be thankful. These are all lessons we can apply at the feast and year-round. So next year, make it the best feast ever, and let's apply these lessons whenever we can.